put on my big girl shoes here. I'm going to move this down. Good evening. My name is Michelle, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm very happy to be here. Microphones always kind of freak me out a little bit because I have a projecting voice anyway, so I always usually talk softer into that. So if I get too loud, somebody kind of flag me. Speaking for 10 minutes has never been a problem for me. I usually have run-on sentences. So I want to be as clear and decisive when I speak to you tonight for a brief time as possible. My sobriety date is September 13th, 2011. I haven't had a drink of alcohol or any type of substance in my body since 2005, and that includes nicotine. That year, that day, I just stopped everything. It had all gotten out of hand, and I had to stop everything all at one time. I was not willing to come into Alcoholics Anonymous until September 13, 2011, because I was not an alcoholic. I was born into a family of alcoholics. I have siblings who are alcoholics. I was told very early on that my mother was grateful that I did not get this disease of alcoholism, because it has destroyed so many lives that she knows, and she was grateful for that. That was a very powerful message to me. I was the oldest of four, so I took that on and proceeded to keep in denial about my drinking. I did drink as a teenager. I drank in my 20s. I was not a daily drinker. I wasn't drunk on Christmases. I wasn't what, but when I drank, I blacked out every single time or I got sick. When I drank fast. I do everything fast. I talk fast. I hurry fast. And when I drank fast. That's how it works best for me. When I see people sipping drinks, I'm thinking, that looks no fun at all. It looks like it's going to take forever. Wherever I wanted to go, that way looked like it was going to take forever. So a few glasses of wine turned into some shots, turned into just, you know, to walk a straight. I couldn't even wait for it to chill by the time I was done. I had 2 years of fast drinking, hard drinking, and it didn't even kick in till I was in my late 40s. My first drink, I recollect vaguely at the age of around 4 or 5, came from a long line of beer drinkers. My grandparents were both drinkers, beer drinkers. My dad was an alcoholic. My mom's dad was an alcoholic. My grandpa had a still in his garage. I remember the smell of the yeast and all that. I just thought, oh, terrible. I was finicky and very judgmental, opinionated, and sneaky. So whenever I did start drinking, and drinking for what I say real, it was all secret. I drank when I left work, when I left home to go to work. I had an evening job, picked a job where it was open bar. The waitresses, the servers, they were going back there getting cocktails for the customers. You can pour yourself them too, pour yourself one. And that worked out really well for me for about 2 years. And other substances in a restaurant, not hard to find. And when I found another substance, I found that I could continue drinking, but I loved this substance. I would forego the drinking for this other substance. A drink would help keep me not flying too high. But I'm a go girl. I like to go fast, and I like to use things that made me go fast. So I had a drink at 5. I remember them giggling that my eyebrows turned red. And I remember something about it really taking my breath away. I don't know if that was a pleasant feeling, but I do distinctly remember that. No drinking going on in our home after the age of my age of 7. My sister was about 3. My brother was about 6. Both of them are in this program today, and for that I'm very grateful. Very grateful. What was I saying? 7. So when we moved and came up away from the drinking, we moved to get away from the drinking. All the bad people, all that bad stuff, moved away, and no drinking going on in our home. But a lot of chaos, a lot of some violence, some chaotic fighting, all the behaviors of if everybody was sitting down drinking on a regular basis. I'm convinced of that. It was a loving home, but it was very chaotic at the same time. So I knew that, you know, I knew that adrenaline and watching what was going on and becoming super vigilant for the other shoe to drop. I could, like, sense when things, as a small girl, things were going to change and it was going to get a little creepy. And I remember a time or two or maybe more where I would take my sister and go in the other room and just kind of try to coddle her, close her ears, and wait for the storm to stop. And this is a home with no drinking. The craziness of the disease, the behaviors. What I had the opportunity to do because of stopping in 2005 on my own and then coming in here years later was to see that drinking was just a symptom. I wish I had a drink of water. My behaviors were full-blown. By the time I got in here, I was dark, I was depressed, I was riddled with anger and resentment. I was pushing people away. I have a beautiful family, and I pushed them all away because of the bitterness inside. I felt bitter. I felt awful. And every week, I was pissed at somebody. I remember my mom talking to my husband. I was around the corner one day, and she said, "Who's she upset at?" He goes, "I don't know. I'm just grateful it's not me, but it'll roll around to me in about a week or so." You know, and that was true. And that was true. I didn't know how to be happy. I didn't know how to be happy before I drank. I didn't know how to be happy without drinking. And today, thank you, Rick, as a result of Alcoholics Anonymous and being willing to come in here, that's all I had to do was just be willing to come in here. I didn't want to. I didn't like it. Sandy gave me my first 24-hour chip, and when she was hugging me, I could not let go because I felt like if she let go of me, I would just melt from that rug. Broken. We all get here broken. I learned that I'm no different than anybody else. I learned that mothers of babies have alcoholism. I learned that because where I came from, only guys had alcoholism, only men, only old people, only my dad. And they closed the drapes and they drank and nobody worried about going to school and nobody. So when I walked into a Tuesday night meeting of about 50 wonderful women, I couldn't believe it. I didn't know that that's what was happening. And these women had careers, and these women were intelligent, and they were dressed nice. And, you know, they became my friends. They became my salvation. Every time, if I ever reach out, I would call anybody. And you're all in this room today. Nobody turned me away. They would listen to me in my entirety over what I thought was going on and what was wrong, and there was a lot wrong. What brought me in here was one day we went to a speaker meeting just because, oh, my husband's an alcoholic, so that's a good reason to go to a speaker meeting, right? Because he needs his meeting so that I can have a happier life. And there was a gentleman from Hermosa Beach. He told a story, and it was humorous, and it was everything wonderful. And at the end, I can say this without too much choking up. He said, when you come into Alcoholics Anonymous, we tell you that everything's going to be okay. And he said, and that's a lie. Everything's going to be what it's going to be. He said, but the good news is you're going to be okay. And I knew I wasn't okay. I knew I'd never been okay. And I knew that this was going to be the way for me to be okay. I came in here and resistance. No, I think once I started listening, it's like, okay, you're not responsible for everything, whatever people do, this and that. I'm like, this is good. This is some pressure coming off of my shoulders. This feels good. Because I'm also a codependent. I'm a raging codependent. I have another program also. And therefore, that was relief. Then I started thinking, this is cool. I'm not so much having to worry about everybody and this and that. And then I started realizing the control that I have. And how that would be the death of me, controlling everyone and everything and every situation to suit me so I didn't have to not feel good. I don't like not feeling good. I guess I think I'm supposed to feel good all the time. I will use sugar to feel good. I will use caffeine to feel good. Just, you know, that's what I do. I will take too much Tylenol PM if I want to sleep better. I will take anything and use it too much if I think it's going to help me with what I have to do, narcotic or not narcotic, alcohol or no alcohol. My first addiction with love for sugar was at 5. Sneak into that refrigerator, get out that cookie dough, ate that. Oh, and the sneaky, tuck the package back up, put it back in the fridge like nobody could see. That continued on all my life. I have 5 boxes of Girl Scout cookies in the closet in 6th grade. Supposed to go out and sell them. Ate them all in a 3-month period. You know? Money, I guess somebody will pay for it. I don't know. And I look back, I'm like, those were cute things. But those were absurd things. That's not okay, you know? The insidiousness of my disease and my sneakiness around it has only been brought to my attention as a result of this program, because I never did anything that I thought was that big of a deal. Everybody else definitely did. This program is giving me the ability to look at myself and some days maybe exclusively look at myself. That one's a tough one, but I do feel I'm getting better. I feel the atmosphere at home settling down. My daughter's in this program for 9 months. This program is teaching me how to be okay, so if anybody else isn't, I was told my children have an 80% chance of catching this disease. One did. We still have one to go. We'll see. But I had this program. I was reading out of the Drop Your Rock the other day, and it says, I don't usually, you know, when, but this has meant something. Sick and tired of the character defects of which alcoholism is a symptom. Sick and tired of their effect, not on our past, but on my present time. These behaviors live well, live on and well if I'm not operating the 12 steps. I have a sponsor. I have a good sponsor. She tells me things that I don't like to hear. I said, I don't even remember having a good drunk story when I was, you know, done. And she said, you want a drunk story? I'll tell you a drunk story. Told me her last drinking escapade that almost she didn't come back. We have family members that didn't make it in here. We have a family member who is in prison as a result of this disease. And we also have people that are in these rooms. So there is recovery, and I'm grateful for that. I think I'm about up. I don't know what I said here. If anything could help anybody, this program has saved my soul. That's all I know. It has saved my soul and giving me all of you and getting me to learn of a higher power that I can tell I knew was in here, but now it's coming about in here. And he is with me when I am willing to let him in. And that's how it goes for me today. Thank you. I'm Michelle Alcoholic.
Alrighty, everybody, let's give a rousing welcome to our featured speaker, one of the most profound thinkers I know, Anthony D.
Hi, everybody, my name's Anthony, and I'm an alcoholic. Glad everybody's here. I was kind of surprised there wasn't any newcomers, but any visitors or anybody, if you are new, if you have less than about 35 years, welcome. Keep coming back. I think my story is kind of different because I, for some reason, always feel that I'm different in my alcoholism and in my sobriety. I never do things the way I've been shown. Not from here, from the Monterey Peninsula, a place called Seaside, California. Grew up there in kind of a normal neighborhood. It was the 60s, and everybody had kids, and everybody played, and we walked to school, and everything seemed normal to me, and I think I kind of felt normal at that time. As time went on, I don't think I felt different, but I felt less than. I think the first thing I started using to feel different was tobacco. And I love tobacco. I started smoking cigarettes when I was 10 years old. And it worked. And it worked for 40 years. And I still crave nicotine, which I finally quit. I always wanted to be something different than I was. I was never who I thought I should be. I was the youngest of four, kind of a little sickly fat kid, half Italian, we appeared to have what everyone else had, but for some reason, personally, I was not who I thought I should be, which was either tougher or stronger or kind of like a lower class person, I guess you would call it. I wanted to feel something, I guess is what it was. Although what I kept doing was suppressing my feelings. By the eighth grade, one of the kids that I ran with, they had like about 300 gallons of this Applejack in their basement. His father was Portuguese. He had turned it out being adopted, but they had all this wine in the basement, and he brought a half gallon of that crap up to Top Field at the junior high, and we all started drinking that stuff. And when you're not used to drinking, that homemade wine got a pretty good kick to it. I remember if you could choke down an 8-ounce glass of that garbage, you were there. You were falling down. My first attempt, puked all over my desk. Don't remember what happened. Appeared nothing bad happened because couldn't wait to do it again. And I continued on that way. It takes a long time to fine-tune drinking when you start from zero. A lot of piss in the bed and, just falling asleep and just coming home late and not showing up and just not giving a crap anymore. The alcohol didn't make me feel... It didn't make me feel equal to everyone else. It made me not care anymore. I didn't care what you thought. I felt pretty good. And eventually I did fine-tune it. By the time I was in high school, we'd drink on the bus before school. We'd do other things. But I was kind of a... I tried to play it off the best I could, because my dad would beat my ass if it was back in the days when you could still take care of problems at home. And I seen my brothers get it a couple times, and I wasn't really looking forward to that. So I did the best that I could to keep off the radar screen. And things just continued to become more about drinking. Never went to a dance, never went to a football game, just drank. And if I was drinking and at a football game, we left because it was just boring and we needed to get to some serious drinking. I had a couple brothers. My number two brother was getting ready to go in the Navy, and I was going to get to take over his job down at the wharf. I kind of come from a fishing family, so that was kind of a starting point for me. I was like 15 years old and just started working weekends and holidays and summertime, and worked on the party boat and, made money, and that kind of helped finance my alcoholism. I had problems. They pretty much let us do whatever we wanted as long as we showed up. The big thing was not to miss the boat in the morning, because if you miss the boat, it leaves without you, and then they get very upset. By the time I was 24 years old, I pretty much wore out my welcome down at the wharf. And some of the older guys were getting their own boats and starting to work commercially, and they partied. So it just seemed like the next step to go along, since I kind of wore out my welcome as it was. I tried to do the best I could as far as have a good time and get away with it. We didn't drink all the time, but when we came in, after we were done unloading, it was kind of like a bunch of freaking sailors, where you just piss away your whole check in the day or two before you take off again. And then you got free room and board, and you can milk your hangover, and usually takes a day to get in position, so you have the first half a day or a day to rest up before you start working again. And I've seen a lot of things going on, but because of the denial of my drinking, none of it was soaking in. People were starting to die. A lot of the guys I ran with weren't living very long. And it was always, oh yeah, he just had a heart attack. Or, the guy's 30 years old. Oh yeah, he just had a heart attack. Or, he just had some bad luck. And, when you're in your early 20s, you pretty much think, that will never happen to me. I only had one drunk driving, and as you can tell, I'm kind of proud of that. And that wasn't my fault. I was, circumstances were, my girlfriend jumped out of the car, and in Monterey, there's a lot of one ways, and had to, go 90 miles an hour through the tunnel, and then make a U-turn, and then go back and try to find her down on Cannery Row. And the cop found me, but that really wasn't my fault. They just changed the law. It was no longer a 502. It was, I don't even remember what it was. But I do remember it was 48 hours in jail and some kind of fine. And I guess they made me go to meetings. I do not remember. I remember the 48 hours in jail. I was uncomfortable there, and all I remember was one of my brother's buddies were there and told me, "Come stand over here." And I was okay then. And then I went into another 10-year blackout of continuing on, all the time thinking that, I'm not like those guys sleeping on the beach and or under the wharf, but I wasn't much better. I did have a car, which was amazing. Used to love to drink and drive. Alcohol is a cheap drug. It's real easy to maintain a hell of a buzz 24 hours a day. I was a bar drinker, which is unusual because I'm antisocial. I do not like people. I don't like to talk to people. I don't like people talking to me, even in sobriety. Would enjoy myself for about the first 25 minutes, then usually I would either become a complete asshole or start a fight or be talking profanities real loud in front of all the tourists but they'd never kick us out. Hardly ever would I don't think I was, I might have got 86 out of one of those bars, but there was about 20 on there, so I could always just, take that one out of the rotation and keep going around. As time went on, I was thinking for some reason, I'd be sitting in the bar and people would come in for an hour or two and then they'd go home and maybe people come in and then some of the guys, there'd be a handful of us, two, three people, we'd close the place down, but most people had places to go, and I kind of wanted that. A lot of people talk about when they get here what they lost. I never had anything. I didn't have people say they get married and they have kids. I don't know how you do that. I remember thinking, well, I can't get my own place because there won't be enough money to drink and party. And I was a partier, and I never went to a party in my entire life. It was a party me cruising around in my Camaro and whatever, pint after pint after pint, just going in circle after circle. And so I was thinking to myself, you know, maybe if I could just get my shit together, which meant maybe have 5 or 10 drinks and then go home or go pass out on the boat, that things might get better, you know. I was looking for a change, but I wasn't sure how willing I was to try to change. At the time, I remember I always had asthma real bad when I was a kid, which is amazing since I started smoking at 10. But my mom had me go to the doctor, and the doctor says, even if you quit smoking, you're going to die of emphysema in 10 years. And I said, ooh, that's not good. So I said, I don't have to quit drinking, do I? And he says, no, just that smoking. So I said, ooh, right on. So I started riding my bike. I was only 27 years old. I was still a young guy. So I started riding my bike and working out. And I go back about 3 weeks later, and the doctor goes, you just put 10 years back on your life. And I think, this guy's full of crap. This must be some scam him and my mom got to get me to quit smoking. So I start smoking, I start drinking, I quit working out, and I just go on another runner for about 5 more years. I don't know, other than I just hate to be told anything. Even in sobriety, I don't like to take suggestion. But I ran for a couple, 3 more years, and I was down at the, I think I had my boat then, I was down at the wharf, and I was drinking, of course, because it wasn't working. And I saw my wife down there. I saw Michelle, and you know, I was thinking, you know, if this is going to work, you know, I'm probably going to have to do something different, and maybe that means I have to quit drinking. So I didn't quit drinking right away, but I kind of started, you know, making the move on her a little bit, and it seemed like, you know, maybe I had a chance, because usually I didn't have a chance, and I hated women anyway, so I figured it probably wasn't going to work out anyway. But, you know, I was thinking, for some reason, I must have had a flashback about going to meetings or something, because I don't remember ever going to any. But I went to the Lano Club because I figured, well, you know, maybe I need to quit drinking. I was like 30 years old by then. And I'd go to the meetings, and then I'd go down to the wharf and drink. And I was listening, and I was listening. I kind of wanted it. And then I would get like 30 days. And then I think that was my controlled drinking stage. I'd get 30 days, and then I would, because I knew I was probably an alcoholic, although I didn't want to do anything to actually stop drinking. I was hoping I was just going to, somehow they were going to wave the cross over me or something, and I was going to get it. But I figured, you know, probably alcoholic, but I ain't no drug addict. You know what I mean? So I go down to the wharf, smoke some weed, do some other stuff, and just sit there and drink my Coca-Cola, staring at all those bottles back behind the wall there. And I drink. And to this day, I can tell you, I don't know if I'm an addict, but I can't do one thing without doing everything. I have a real hard time, because when I start drinking and I start doing other stuff, I start doing all the stuff together, all at once. And sometimes it lasts for 3-4 days, and sometimes I make it home. But the worst feeling is hearing those frickin' birds chirping in the morning, and you're thinking to yourself, oh yeah, you did it one more time, and now you gotta try to fight through the whole 10-hour day, and, you know, try to survive. And, so I was doing my controlled drinking. Also, I believe, honestly believe, that was kind of my detox too. I guess I was kind of weaning off. I don't know how bad I was. I always compare myself to my brothers and everybody else. And of course I wasn't that bad, you know, because I'm special and I'm unique. And I could pretty much do everything with just my brain power. My last drunk was March 10th, 1991. Me and my running partner hit all the bars, we went downtown, we went to a different town, we drank there, we went to Basso's, Segovia's, we went down, we hit it all, we went back to his house, we drank to 4 a.m., and I was sober. And then I was thinking, now what the hell do I do? And I came to a point where it says in the book, where we come to the point where we cannot drink and we cannot not drink. And I was worried, you know, because I have a superhuman brain and I'm supposed to be able to not be like you people. You know, I know I'm an alcoholic, but somehow I was supposed to be able to stop on my own. Once again, I remembered this meeting up on the hill where they had some cookies. So I boogied on up there. And I ran into a guy I used to fish for, and this other guy that used to run with one of my brothers. So I said, Uncle Phil, I said, what are you doing here? You know, he says, oh, I got a year. And I think, whoa, you, you know? Phil was a way cool dude. I go, Phil, how about being my sponsor? He goes, well, yeah, I don't know about that. He says, but Frank's my sponsor. He'll sponsor you. And I kind of knew Frank. I knew him from the wharf. He'd been at the wharf. He ran with all those guys. And Frank had about 3 years or so. I don't know. He might have had a little bit more. And I was willing. And Frank started sponsoring me. And Frank was a good sponsor, except for I hate him, because he would tell me to do all these things that I didn't want to do, that I did not want to do. Luckily, I was in between seasons there, so I had like a couple, 3 months before I had to do anything, and I had plenty of money to hold me over. And so Frank was telling me all this stuff about, you know, you got to read the book, and I'm thinking, wow, you know, because I never even read a book cover to cover in my entire life. I was thinking, man, those books must cost a lot of money. So I waited and I waited, and after about 3 weeks I found out it was like $4.75. I still have that book. You know, the guy with the enormous brain, you know, is dragging his feet because, you know, he might need that $5 for something else, you know. And I think that's why we have the best chance of succeeding after we've been through a living hell, because we don't have any options. I, for some reason, still thought I might have options, at least not having to do what he said. He would always want me to be the treasurer or the secretary of a meeting. And I would tell him, you know, that's cool, Frank, but you know, if I got to go fishing, I'm going to be gone for a couple, 3 months. And he says, oh, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. You know, I'll take over your commitment if you got to go. And always within a week or two, he'd be stuck with another commitment. He took me to conferences. I did a bunch of stuff. I did a lot of stuff. I did not do a lot of stuff right off. Me and Michelle were going out, And he told me, yeah, you shouldn't be in a relationship, but with my great brain power, I knew that I could pull it off, because by not drinking, that was my problem, drinking, not being a total freaking asshole. So, I ran that into the ground, just being myself. That's when the growth came. When the pain was there, that's when the growth came. That's when I really dug my feet in and started doing it. Started reading the book, started working the steps, and back home, they only expect you to have the fourth and the fifth step done by your first year. And then after your first year, they let you chair at a usually the home group, the big meeting. I'm reading, we just read the step over and over and over again. And sure and shit, this stuff starts happening in my life, and I start thinking, well, I come to the realization what these steps are really about, how they affect me, and how it is really about me. Because I still want to think, yeah, on the surface, these steps sound really cool, but I do not need to do them. I do not need to do them. I can tell you all about them. I can tell you why you need to do them, but they do not pertain to me. Now, what they get you is a lot of pain. And if anyone is new, what I would suggest is all this stuff in this book is freaking for real. This is the real deal. It's all right down. It's all right there. It's spelled out in plain English. And millions of people have already done this and found it to be true. Unfortunately, for people like me, I always have to learn the hard way, even in sobriety. So if you do not enjoy pain, do it 100%. You could do it 40% like I have over the last 22 years and bang your head against the wall and be an asshole half the time and hopefully still stay sober. But you don't have to go through all that pain. That is not what our higher power is trying to give us. I honestly believe that I don't think I deserve this. Luckily, my higher power does believe I deserve this. And I think that's the only reason why I'm still here. Every time I've thought of drinking, but I never thought of putting alcohol, actually drinking it. Because I know when I was doing my little detox and controlled drinking, I actually proved to myself that I am an alcoholic. There is no more need to determine that maybe, possibly, somehow, I'm going to grow a new leg and be able to drink. It is not in the cards for me. And luckily, the good part about that is this program. This is my medicine right here. This is where I can get some relief from inside my head. They say, you hear God speaking through other people. I believe that because the voices that I hear in my head are not God. That guy's a real butthole. That guy says a lot of crappy shit. He's thinking bad things all the time. He is not a good person, and he doesn't want me to be happy. After a couple, 3 years, and I got my shit together semi-pretty good, Michelle and I started seeing each other again, and we got married. And I didn't know what that's like the big book. I didn't know what that was. I thought that meant I go to work, and if I come home, you feed me, and then I go to work again. I don't know how to do anything. I have to be taught. And even after 20 years, I'm not a very good student. Okay? Luckily, she puts up with me most of the time. My oldest brother died because of this disease. He was actually killed in an automobile accident by a drunk driver, ironically. He was dying of cirrhosis of the liver. He was only about 40 years old. And that was just before we got married. And this program was here for me. Everybody back home, they helped me. And my sponsor says a lot of stuff that I don't want to hear. We went through a lot of things that were difficult. It's all covered in this book about how to handle things and how to avoid making new messes. You know, we try to clean the slate and try to not add new boo-boos on there every day that we need to continue to work on. After we got married, I think we moved to Visalia. That was about 19 years ago. We moved to Visalia. There's supposed to be a job here. I don't know why I didn't get to keep fishing, but we came here. I'm sure there was a job or something. We came here. We bought a house. Everything was way cool. Victoria was born. And then I lost my freaking job. And I went back to Monterey and started fishing again. And I freaking commuted for about 4 or 5 years. And then I was still fishing the whole time. I'd fish salmon and albacore on my boat. And then in the wintertime, we'd fish squid down the Channel Islands. And I just hop back and forth. And I'd come home every weekend or every couple, 3 weeks. Or I'd be home for 3 months or whatever. And it kind of worked. When Victoria knew who I was rather than just that guy, you know, and there was Daddy, it kind of got harder. I was never home, and Michelle was here pretty much by herself, and we moved to Salinas. We moved back home, and I kept fishing, and we bought a house in Salinas, and just life. I had Frank was still my sponsor, and he was always telling me things I didn't want to hear, and I was doing my best to power through it, but mainly I continue to try to prove him wrong. I also had another buddy, my buddy Bill, that had like 10, 15 years by the time I made it back to Monterey. He used to always tell me the opposite that Frank would tell me. So, which was the best? Because Frank would tell me that I was the sick one, and Bill would always tell me, those people are the sick ones. So what I would do is I'd just pray and try to figure out which one of us was the sickest and try to clean it up that way. Things never went really smooth for us. We did the best we could. My dad was getting old. Well, my dad was dying, and and we were getting ready to. We didn't like Salinas anymore, and we were gonna move back to Visalia. And I was waiting for my dad to die. He was in the rest home, and he worked real hard to try to make it home. And we finally got him home, and a couple weeks later, right after his birthday, he died. And and I moved back to Visalia. I was still commuting there while they were still here the last 2-3 months. Got through that. That was hard. And then my other brother died right after that. Because of this disease, he drank himself to death. He wasn't doing good after my dad died, and he was really going off the deep end, and he didn't want to listen, and he wanted to drink himself to death, and he got a drunk driving, and they instead of taking him to Salinas to the county jail, they decided just to cut him loose early. And I know what he was doing. He was looking to see where the car was. And at about 6 o'clock in the morning, he stepped out in front of a car doing about 40 miles an hour and got himself killed. No matter how you look at it, that's alcoholism. You know, my dad told me that he was alcoholic. And if I think really hard, I do remember him drinking. And I do remember him yelling and screaming constantly. And at the funeral, they even mentioned how far down the street they could hear my father yelling all the time. That is untreated alcoholism right there. That's what that is. That misery, the no release that we get from this book of all those things, all that pressure, that's what that was. And you know, when I was newly sober, my dad told me, you know, he more or less told me that, you know, the freaking man just quits. You don't need to go to AA. And if I wasn't, if I didn't have the foundation that I had from Frank and my other sponsor and all those people that were helping me, I would have drank. Because I used to drink over shit like that that he used to say all the time. Shit, we almost lost the house in Salinas. We've been bankrupt. Sickness, death. We made it. We made it. And every time I'd ask Frank, what do you think we should do? And we just pray about it. And he'd say stupid shit like, even if it doesn't work, we'll learn something from this. And I did. Looking back, I see so many lessons that I could have learned so much earlier. And so many lessons that I continue to forget and have to repeat day in and day out because of my hard-headedness. We sold the house in Salinas, moved back to Visalia, found another house. I mean, it just went boom. We closed one house and opened the other house a week apart in the proper direction so that we could move out of this one and into this one without skipping a beat, without having not a place, no motel room, so just load up the stupid thing, zippity-doo-dah, you know. 2-3 times, and we're into a brand new house. We were looking for a house, and for some reason they're doing some stupid. I guess houses were hard to find here. There's some stupid lottery. We say, well, we'll just go there, and if we win the lotto and get the house, it's God's will. Simple, right? So we go there. We don't win the lotto. And I'm thinking, what the hell does this mean? We go back to Salinas. 3 days later, they call. They said, a house just opened up for you. Huh? Pretty badass shit. A lot of good things happened. I got a stepdaughter and a granddaughter and Victoria, who I named after my brother. My number one brother. And then I have my son, Anthony. 2 pretty good kids. My poor daughter's exactly like me. So I'm very proud of her. She has 9 months and 2 weeks. I like to think that because I lost my brothers, that maybe God's looking out for my immediate family here. My wife came into the program. She's getting the hang of it. I want to thank all the women here for just grabbing hold of her and holding her down and putting your hand over her mouth and trying to calm her down. Thank you very much. I want to, when we've lived here for like 8 freaking years now, and I just finally decided that I live here too. After about 4 years here, I didn't go to a lot of meetings here because you people aren't like me. There's no half-Dago kids from Monterey that were fishermen that live here. I cannot relate to you. You guys are all different. And I don't like you, and I don't have to be around you. And then what I did was, once again, I got in enough pain that I actually reached out my hand. I started going to the men's meeting on Monday night, and they allowed me to say however I honestly feel. Usually I don't speak to at a meeting like this. I'm more of a Lano Club or a men's meeting kind of a speaker because of my violent outbursts. But I started going to the men's meeting, and that's kind of my home group. I would say if I had a home group, it'd be the men's meeting. A bunch of really good guys. Freaking Tommy. I don't know where you're at, Tommy. My buddy Tommy. Very nice man. He knows about kids. My daughter, you know, she's only been here 9 months, and you know, when she was crashing and burning, I was crashing and burning too. And that's when I started asking for help. I don't ask for help because I don't need no freaking help. But I do need help. And why wouldn't I ask for help? Why wouldn't I get the strength? Two's better than one, and 10's better than 5, and 20, we could do this thing, you know. People were there for me. I actually reached out and I started talking to people because I was freaking out. You know, I can give the best advice to anybody who I really don't know, and it's good advice. But I'll never take that advice. When it has to do with my kids, I don't know what I'm gonna do, but I'm freaking out. I have no sense of anything that I've learned over the last 22 years. Somehow, through the grace of God, my daughter did make it in here, and I hope she hangs on to this. The hardest part to all this is that we see people come and we see people go. That freaking kills me. That's why I mentioned that, you know, I wish there were some new people. You know, like, where's Phil? My brother Phil. Man, he's doing it. He's doing it. He's doing it. He wants this. I can see it in him. When you see guys like this, after the year, wow, that makes me know that I'm happy to still be here. You know what I mean? This program works. If you are new, and that's under 35 years or less, stay here. Do it right now. Don't wait to no control drinking. No bullshit. Do exactly what you're told right now, the first time, and get the good stuff from this program. Not the crappy coffee, not the stale donuts, not all that crap, not the cigarettes. Hang out with the winners. And the winners are the guys not with 60 days like you, but the guys with 10, 15, 20 years. Hang out with your sponsor, We always went to have coffee. Me and all the other loser newcomers and my sponsor, we drink coffee because I didn't have to work, and just stay up and talk and just and become a group and get that strength. Get that strength. Don't be by yourself. That's when that freaking asshole in there starts talking to you and telling you maybe one more time. We don't know how many times we got guys go out and they never come back. They never come back. A lot of damage can happen overnight. People die all the time. We don't know how long we're going to be here. What a shame it would be if you only had a year to accomplish something and you screwed off drinking for one more year. Wouldn't you like them to say, instead of saying, yeah, he was a wild one, they say, he was a good guy. He tried to help people. He tried to be something different, something useful. And I haven't always done that. But I sure appreciate what everyone has done for me. If you're here, stay here. Don't mess around. I think that's all I have. I'm Anthony. I'm an alcoholic. Thank you.